I look like a cowboy here with this six shooter attached. Good thing I'm hiding behind the pulpit. Yeah, it's nearly 3 years now since we last met. And you know, I always have very sweet memories of Melbourne. Churches are like people. Every church has its own character. And when you think of a particular church, it's like you're thinking of a particular person. And it's every time I think about Melbourne Church, it gives me certain warm feelings inside. The love, the kindness, the thoughtfulness of the Melbourne brothers and sisters always stays with me like a kind of perfume. So it's a joy to be back. Of course, when there will be the chance to come back again is very uncertain, because in the last 3 years, my health has been going down the drain, getting worse and worse. And this long flight from Hong Kong, being stuck in one seat for a total of nearly 10 hours, does all kind of mischief to my back. So the last few days I've been trying to recover, not to mention, of course, one loses a whole night's sleep flying through the night. And maybe some of you are great sleepers, you know, you get on the plane and you can sleep. But for me, I just can't sleep on the plane. It's very difficult. And I don't think I got more than 10 minutes of dozing on the plane. So still in the process of trying to recover. But soon after getting back to Hong Kong, within a week of returning to Hong Kong next month, I have to go on a very long flight again, another 12, 13 hours just to cross the Pacific to Vancouver. And after that, another 5.5 hours to Montreal. So you can imagine that with a back problem and sitting long hours in the plane, it causes serious difficulties. One occasion, my back was hurting me so much that I pressed myself up on the arms of the chair and suspended myself in mid-air on my two arms, you see. It's like, I don't know if you're doing gymnastics on the wooden horse, you see, or the parallel bars, I should say. You push yourself up on the parallel bars, and the air stewardess came by and looked at me, what is that? What am I doing there? She said, are you all right? I said, not all right. My back is giving me trouble. So she said, oh, I see, all right. But she couldn't do much about that. Anyway, the point is, it's not at all clear whether it will be possible if, after 3 more years for me to return to Melbourne. So I wonder if this might just be my last trip to Melbourne. Well, we'll leave these things in the hands of the Lord to see how He will work this out. You know, if it were not for the grace of the Lord, I wouldn't be here at all today. Because He has really watched over me, without His protection and His care, I wouldn't be talking to you today. So what happens in 3 years, we don't know. But I know what happened a year ago. And I just want to share the fact that our lives are always in His hands. A year ago, I was back in Canada, almost exactly 1 year, March of last year. And in Canada, it was still in deep winter. And I had to go to Toronto from Montreal. So we have two churches in Toronto, and I felt it was my heart's desire to visit them and to fellowship with them and to encourage them, as well as receiving encouragement from them. It always goes both ways, isn't it? Well, it was a very busy weekend in Toronto, and the time came for me to return to Montreal, 500 kilometers to drive along the highway with minus 10 degrees temperature outside. So I got on the highway back from Toronto to Montreal. And as I was driving out of Toronto, I began to feel very tired. I didn't realize I was quite as tired as that. It was a rush hour, traffic was very heavy, and I just gotten out of the city and was on the highway to Montreal. I was beginning to feel more and more tired. And I thought, how am I going to cover these 500 kilometers back to Montreal? And as I drove along, I began to find myself getting sleepy. So I realized, as a reasonably experienced driver, how dangerous that is. So what were my choices, I wondered? What could I do? And I decided, well, maybe the best thing is I will stop at every station along the way. On the Canadian highways, you have rest areas where you can drive into, where they can have a drink, and so on. So I stopped everywhere. I even got off the highway at one point and went into a small local town with a big shopping center, a big mall. And I walked around there for over an hour to make sure I was as wide awake as I could get before driving on. And so it went on. Every rest area I stopped, walked around, took some breath of air, made myself as fresh as I could, kept on driving. Until I passed a town called Kingston, which was about more than 250 kilometers already away from Toronto, more than halfway to Montreal. And I thought, well, less than halfway to go, so I have to keep going, keep awake. It was by this time very dark outside, and I was driving on and fighting this. I felt the sleep was coming on. I was fighting to stay awake. And then presto, in one flash of a second, I'd fallen asleep. The car was cruising at 100 kilometers an hour. And suddenly I heard a tremendous sound of a bang, and I woke up. And then I looked around, and I saw snow and ice flying past me. See? And I looked up, and I saw one highway on this side and one highway on that side. And I had dropped into the ditch between the two highways, right onto the hard ice. It was frozen ice in the ditch between the two highways. And in that split second, I was wondering, which one is the right highway? If I go up the wrong side, I will go head on to oncoming traffic and end up with a head-on crash. And of course, the car was still flying with the momentum of the speed going on. And then finally, reckoned that it must be on this side, which is the highway. Now the next question is, how do you get the car up on an icy embankment? And the wonder is, how come the car didn't turn over when it went down the embankment? It should have turned over, but it didn't. It went sideways down and then kept going inside the ditch. So I decided that while the car was still moving with momentum, I would swing the car back onto the highway and try getting up there again. And hopefully the car wouldn't turn over in the process, but I couldn't stay in the ditch. So I swung the car up, and I come to think of it, I don't know how the car got up that embankment. It's still a mystery to me. It didn't strike me at that time, but I don't know how. Any of you have driven in snow and ice, probably many of you haven't, you know that the car wheels cannot grip snow and ice. It just can't go up an embankment. And to this day, at that time, it did strike me. It took several months later, I thought about it, and I thought, how did the car get up? It's still a mystery. It is a sheer miracle. On top of that, in Canada, which is half the year you're in snow and ice anyway, we change to snow tires in winter, which gives it a much better grip on icy ground. But because it's such a nuisance to keep changing every 6 months from regular tires to snow tires and back to regular tires, so a large proportion of drivers now use what are called all-season radials. It means you use it year in and year out, these radial tires. And I also switched to these radial tires, you see, which means that they actually have a poorer grip than snow tires on snow and ice. They don't grip the snow and ice so well. So that is makes it even more mysterious how the car managed to get up a snow and ice embankment. Anyway, I got up, but the force of the momentum shot the car right across the highway down the other side of the embankment. It was like you shot through and came right up and down the other side. And I thought, oh no, now I'm down on the other side. Now. And the amazing thing is I didn't hit any of the traffic coming at full speed. They're all in the highway, of course, going at around 70 miles an hour, 100 kilometers. And went down. I had to try and get the car back up another embankment, back onto the highway. And this went on. Anyway, finally, I managed to get the car back on the highway. By this time, I'd thought that the whole car body was smashed to pieces because it was banging into all kinds of things along the way. And I thought, what's left of this car? Somehow the car got back onto the highway. I steadied the car. It was wobbling, of course, and I wondered whether this thing was going to get me home anymore. Amazingly, the car stabilized, and then I kept going. But of course, on the highway, you can't stop. So I kept going until the next rest station, and I was amazed it was still running. I got to the next rest station, got out of the car, and took a look to see what's left of the car body. And to my amazement, there wasn't so much as a scratch on the car. Nothing. There was no damage, nothing to the car. It was untouched. So one mystery after another. But sometimes in the greatest wonders, there is one little thing that stands out as particularly astonishing. And that was the fact that when I had left Toronto, the dear co-workers had, of course, given me some food and drink to take along. And to try and keep awake, I had opened a can of apple juice and put it on the beside the armrest on the seat beside me, so that I would sip the apple juice as I went along. And then after I had gotten back on the highway, I thought, it suddenly occurred to me, yeah, the apple juice, where is it? Because I could imagine the whole car was full of apple juice by now. I looked around and the floor didn't look wet. And I thought, where is the apple juice gone to? Must be all over the seat in that case. Couldn't find it. And then I went on a bit. And then I found the apple juice. Mysteriously, I had a backrest on the passenger seat. And the apple juice had somehow traveled around the backrest and gotten to the door of the car on the other side and sat on the armrest of the door of the other passenger side and was standing upright with no juice come out of it at all. Now remember the force of the car going down the ditch. The obvious thing is, of course, the apple juice would have fallen onto the floor. It takes no genius to understand that. It would have gone right onto the floor. How then did it not go onto the floor, remain upright, travel around, and end up on the armrest? I haven't figured that one out. I said, Lord, you are too amazing. I reached out to grab the apple juice and began to sip it again with thanksgiving. God, my God, is so amazing, so amazing. We are so weak. I struggle with physical weakness, physical exhaustion, and just see the way the Lord watched over us, watched over me. Just amazing. All these years I have walked with God, and how amazing God is. It just boggles the mind. It boggles the mind. And many of these things, I've thought it through back and forth, and I couldn't figure it out. How did it come out like this? I don't understand it. I don't understand how the car got up the icy embankment. You try it sometime. See if you can get up. You back your car up, and you come charging at the embankment and see if you can get up. What's more likely is that your nose of the car would just get stuck into the ice embankment. That's all that would happen. It wouldn't go anywhere. Because of the weight of the car, of course, it'll squash right into the ice and snow. But somehow the car goes up. I don't understand it. And that it did three times. Because I'd overshot each time. I had to come back up on the highway again. And then this apple juice. And how come there's no damage to the car? It's really amazing. On the way to back home, I'd seen another car in the ditch. So I wasn't the only one. I ended up in the ditch. I don't know for what reason he ended up in the ditch. But he never got out. He was in there. Yeah. And there was a... And when I, after this thing happened to me, I went further on, and another 100 kilometers down the road, I saw a whole truck in the ditch, and that one had turned over. So you can understand that it was a very dangerous night to drive on. And truck drivers in Canada are among the most experienced drivers there are. If a truck driver ends up in a ditch, you know, that something wasn't quite right there on that night, or the weather, or whatever it was. I just want to share these things with you because actually it connects with my message that I'm going to share with you in a moment. But there is another thing. When I think of what the Lord has revealed to me through the trials of the physical body, sometimes when asked, I'm serving the Lord, why should I have all these physical trials? I think, as I say frankly to many people, it's because I have too many faults, too many weaknesses that God wants to sort out from me. I have no illusions about that. I think God is kind to me not because I'm better than anyone else. It may well be because I'm worse than most people. And so he has to work very hard on me, you see. Has to straighten me out, stick some pain in me here and there, wear me out because I get too energetic and full of myself, so that I can say, Lord, I have no strength. I can't carry on. Here I am, just like today. I was trying to come out. The pain in my hip was agonizing. I could only groan in pain. But I also know that when it comes to preaching, he's going to take it away, and he always does. I don't know why. I've never been able to understand that one either. Most of you know that I can hardly stand up like this for more than 5 minutes without going into terrible pain. Yet when I have to preach for reasons that I can't understand, I can stand there for 40 minutes, 1 hour, and the pain is simply removed for that time. It's an amazing thing to walk with God. But let me tell you about something else, which if it were not for the grace of God, I might not be here today, which also happened almost exactly a year ago, about the same time. But the beginning of this matter goes back more than 5 years, nearly 6 years ago, when one day I discovered a lump under my arm, right there in the armpit. I suddenly felt a lump and I thought, oh, this doesn't look good. I think most of you know what a lump means, especially when a lump develops in a gland. And I think most of you know that in the armpit, you have the lymph gland, Lingbaxian, as it's called in Chinese. And the lymph gland, of course, is what protects the body as a line of defense, especially against cancer. And that is why if you have a lump, it's a very high likelihood that you have got some form of cancer. And lymph cancer is a big problem. I happen to know enough about physiology of the body and some of these problems to know that this was no kidding. And I thought to myself, so now I'm going to face the reality of possible death. My time has come. And I often thought that I never feared death. And now was the test. You can talk big, you know, when death isn't looking in your face. So you can say, who fears death? And then suddenly death is looking you in the face. Are you scared of me? It looks pretty ugly. So I thought, what shall I do? I dare not mention it to my wife because she, being a nurse, is going to get very excited, you know, get very nervous. And lump. So Lord, so my time has come. I didn't know which way I'm going to leave. I thought I was going to die a martyr. Would have been more glorious, you know. But looks like the privilege is not granted to such lowly person as me, not fit to be a martyr. I'll have to go the ordinary way. But most of you know that death by cancer is one of the most dreadful kinds of death. And not something we like to look forward to. I mean, being a martyr might not be so bad. Sometimes you're tortured a bit, but other times, you know, you just one shot and you're gone, and this is an easy way to die. But slowly, death by cancer.